Hello, we are here today for an interview with Paul Fleming. My name is Olivia Fleming. I'll be the interviewer today. And it is November 10th, and it is 11:09 a.m. We're in Polk City, Florida. And I'm going to be asking Paul Fleming about food today. I am his granddaughter, for context. And first, before we get started, do I have your consent to record this interview?
Yes.
Thank you. Okay. So, to get started, can you tell me a little bit about yourself?
Well, I'm 75 years old. I've had a wonderful life, had a wonderful family, and that's what really matters, I think, is the family. So, and I had a wonderful wife to start with.
And so, your wife, what's her name?
Vernell Fleming.
Okay. Yes,
I interviewed her
earlier today. Vernell Hughes Fleming. Okay.
Oh, and I worked with the railroad for 39 years, retired in 2006. Love retirement. There's nothing like it. To get up and do what you want to do when you want to do it and not have any schedule you have to keep.
And so what are you doing these days with
retirement? Well, garden. Grow different vegetables. I love to play golf. I play golf every Monday. Go to church Wednesday night, Sunday morning, Sunday night, and just enjoy living, because your health is your most important thing that is priceless.
So with your health, what do you think are the big contributors to good health?
The big issue?
Like the big contributing factors, like how do you get good health, in your opinion?
Well, I think to start with, you stay away from stuff that hurts your body. Smoking, drinking, drugs, those three things, they just take, they don't give. So you got to stay away from those. And just try to eat healthy, exercise as much as you can, mm-hmm. And I believe that's the secret.
Well, hopefully you're going to be sharing a few secrets with me today. So I was hoping you could tell me a bit more about your personal relationship with food. So when you think about food, what are some things that come to mind?
Well, when you think about food, I think your favorite food comes to mind, but I don't really have a favorite food. I like just about all foods. There's not much I don't like. So, and there's a lot that I'm like a lot of people that I haven't tried that I say I don't like, but I never tried it. So mm-hmm. I think that's the secret, trying different things. You might like it or you might not. And your taste changes as you get older. Stuff you might not like when you're young, you might enjoy it when you get older. And vice versa, your taste changes, everything changes. Mm-hmm. Nothing stays the same.
So what are some dishes that have continued to be ones that you eat quite often?
One of my favorite is smothered fried chicken with gravy and biscuits. I don't really need nothing but that. But we have a lot of vegetables. We put up vegetables, corn, peas, butter beans. Mm-hmm. We put up tomatoes and soup stock, tomatoes with peppers, onion, and garlic in it. And we put enough up one year, so we just have to do it every other year. Mm-hmm. We don't have to do it every year. We go pick the tomatoes, can the tomatoes, and eat the tomatoes.
So when you say put up, what does that mean? Is that canning?
Yeah.
And
you take the tomatoes and you put them in. We put them in a 5-gallon bucket. Get your water boiling. Pour it over the tomatoes. Cover them with boiling water, and then we put a towel over them and let them sit till they get cool enough where you can work with them, and the peeling will just fall off of them. And then we cook that with salt, just salt and tomatoes, and pack it in the jars. That's it. It's easy to do. There's a lot of work, but it's really easy.
So you say you put up tomatoes, beans, and what else?
Soup stock. We soup put up stock. Tomatoes okay. with, we put hot pepper, bell pepper, onions, and garlic. And it's good in spaghetti, chili, soups. It's good. It's awesome.
So where do you get the tomatoes and vegetables and fruits and anything else that you put up?
Me and my son, we go pick the tomatoes. And it's about 100 miles from where we live to go pick them. But they have them. They have awesome big fields of tomatoes. And you can pick. We picked 17 buckets in 45 minutes. And 5 gallon buckets, and we gave some away to people that was not able to go pick the tomatoes. We gave them to people like that.
So is it pretty common that you give away some of the food that you put up?
Oh yeah, we give away, and we fix for funerals. We fix food for funerals, and the church we go to, they always have a lot. They have hams donated, but we usually cook 2 hams for a funeral. And we cook vegetables to go with it, but the hams are free. They get them donated, so mm-hmm. that's a good thing.
Is it important to you to give food away and to share your food?
Oh, yeah. It's the Bible says it's more blessed to give than to receive. And to start with, is you're blessed to have it to give away. So, mm-hmm. and the more you give, the more you get.
Okay. Well, and you make me think of, you mentioned earlier that you like to garden. And so, is it common that you give away food from your garden too?
Yeah, yep. We grow string beans. We can string beans every other year. I grow them every other year, but we put up enough 1 year to last 2. And we give away a lot of stuff out of the garden. But most people's too lazy to come pick it. They want you to pick it and deliver it to them. Yeah, but we don't do that. Mm-hmm. Well, we do a few, but not many.
So how often are you out in your garden?
Oh, I'm out here. I'm out there this time of year. It's real dry, so I water it every other day. Mm-hmm. But I'm out there almost every day.
Is that something you enjoy, being out in the garden?
Oh, yeah. I like it. Yeah. My father was a good gardener. Had a green thumb. It could grow anything. And he said, if you got enough water and fertilizer, you can grow stuff anywhere. So, a lot of truth to that.
So, can you tell me about your parents generally, about who they were and what they did?
Well, my father was James Nelson Fleming. He was born in 1904. And my mother was Bertie May Shaw Fleming. She was born in 1908. They lived in South Alabama, and he farmed for years. And then we moved to Funiac Springs, Florida, and I was in like the 3rd grade. And he worked for the county there. And then we moved on to Lake Alfred, Florida, and he worked for Minute Maid out in the groves. Mm-hmm. I've had a good life. Mm-hmm. Moved around a little bit, but not in the last 50 years.
Well, what caused great-grandpa to move, and your mother to move to Lake Alfred from Alabama?
To move to
Florida from Alabama.
Well, it was mostly for work.
Okay.
There was very little work up there during that time. And they moved to Dufuniac, and then they moved on down here. A lot of people from South Alabama is right in this area we live in Florida, right in Central Florida. And we have a lot of kin folks at Winter Garden, Florida. And but a lot of people moved to Central Florida because there was work here. They were working mostly in the orange, grapefruit, tangerine, that line of work.
And so Minute Maid would be, they also are involved in that business too, correct?
Yeah. Minute Maid, it was Minute Maid, and then Coca-Cola bought Minute Maid out, and it's Coca-Cola now. And then Catrali's bought Coca-Cola out. They're from Brazil. They brought one of the biggest plants around in Auburndale, Florida. They bought it from Coca-Cola.
So here in Central Florida, how common is it now for people to work in the citrus industry?
The hit is way down. There's where there used to be groves everywhere, there's houses everywhere, or warehouses. There's warehouses in this area, probably more than anywhere in the state. And it's easy to get to the interstate. And but the citrus industry, it started out at Micanopy, and it came south, and it's south of us now. It's south of Central Florida more than it is in Central Florida.
So you've noticed since the time that you've been living here that some of the orange groves are decreasing?
Oh, yeah. Thousands of acres of orange groves there. They're raising Yankees instead of fruit.
You're laughing so hard. So for some of the reasons why you think the citrus industry has really gone down here, what are some of those reasons that you've seen or noticed?
Well, they used to be the packing houses. They packed fresh fruit, and that is just about a thing of the past. They got little stands that has fruit around in different places, but that used to be a big business, shipping fresh fruit. And they still have they have a train. I worked with the railroad. They had a train at Tropicana, and it went from Bradenton, Florida, to New Jersey. It's a train of nothing but orange juice. It's like 70-car train of nothing but orange juice. And it goes up 3 or 4 days a week. And that's still a big business, but it's all the small mom-and-pop businesses is no longer around, are they?
Were you able to see significant changes or shifts in Florida's landscape and industries since you were working on the railroad?
Yeah, we saw a lot of changes. And the railroad changed a lot. Used to, everybody got boxcars loaded with different materials, and they slowly faded out. They called them unit trains. They wanted trains of all the same material, and like coal trains and automobiles. They haul a lot of automobiles.
So what position did you fill on the railroad?
I was a conductor.
Okay.
I started out as a brakeman and went to a conductor after 2 years.
And how do you feel about some of the changes that y'all were seeing and have seen?
It's some of them I don't like, but they're changes and you have to live with them, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Not a lot you can do about them. And a lot of it's good changes, a lot of it's bad changes. So
okay. He's pointing at my notebook. I'm not taking any notes. I'm getting so enthralled in your story that I'm forgetting my train of thought. That's a pun. I didn't even... Well, it makes me think of, particularly here in Central Florida, and changes you've seen, particularly with landscapes, right, and how you, for instance, grow your own food, and how maybe some people don't, what these changes might mean for people's ability to grow food in an area like this, and to have the actual space to grow your food.
Well, you can grow a lot of food in a small pace, but so many people, there's not very many people that grow their own food anymore. That's just about a thing of the past. Mm-hmm. Everybody wants open a can. They want it out of a can instead of... It's worked, but I enjoy it. It's good for you. Mm-hmm. And to plant something and see it grow and then harvest it and eat it, it's real good.
Is that something that your parents taught you?
Oh, yeah.
Intentionally to grow your own food?
Yeah. Yeah. I come from a poor family, but we always had plenty to eat. Raise our own vegetables, had chickens and hogs, and slaughtered the hogs and the chickens, mm-hmm. and raised all vegetables. And you canned in jars. Everything was put up in jars. There was no free, most people, right? I remember that was no freezers, you know, very few. So everything was put up in jars, and it lasts a lot longer than it does in the freezer, put up in jars.
So when it came to beyond gardening, slaughtering animals and whatnot, what was your role growing up in doing that?
Well, I started helping when I remember when I was real small, going with my father. They would get together, and they would all slaughter hogs, maybe 15 or 20, for all the families that was there working. And they raised the cane, and they would all get together and make syrup. And the syrup, they put the syrup up in gallon cans. And everybody had meat. They had a smokehouse. You smoked the meat. The meat lasted a long time. They raised potatoes, and they call them banking them. They would dig a hole in the ground and line it with pine tops and put the potatoes in there and cover it with pine tops and then put tin over it. And it would last for a couple of years.
So today, earlier, you were carrying meat inside. Are you smoking meat today, or what are you doing with that meat today?
I deer hunt, and I had deer hams in the freezer. I took one out, thawed it out, and me and your Uncle Larry has got it ready to... I'm going to make jerky, deer jerky. And all of my kids, grandkids, they all love deer jerky. So you can't make enough of it. So,
do they also hunt?
Well, yes, most of them do.
Mm-hmm. Do you hunt here in Florida, or where do you hunt?
I hunt in Alabama. I used to hunt in Florida, but I hunt now exclusively just in Alabama.
And is it just deer that you hunt, or are there other...
No, I hunt turkey and deer up there. Dove.
How important is it to you to hunt and get your own meat?
Well, it's fair. I don't really care about getting the meat, but getting in the woods is what I really like. I like to be in before daylight and see the world wake up.
So that's your favorite part Can you describe to me what a typical morning hunting would look like and what it would involve?
Well, I get up usually about 4:30, and I'm in the woods and wherever I'm going by 5:15, and then usually gets daylight about 5:45, and I'm in the woods. I carry me some coffee and a couple of cookies and sit there and enjoy my coffee, and you just see everything, see the birds and the squirrels and everything just come to life. And that's what I really enjoy. If I get a chance to take an animal, it's a bonus, but mm-hmm. I really don't care. I'd rather be in there than, but we're blessed to have plenty of deer mm-hmm. and plenty of turkeys. So
you would say that nature is really important to you as well?
Yes, yeah. Yes, definitely.
So do you think of that as also being connected to the food you eat? Your love of nature?
Oh, probably, yeah. I enjoy the deer and the turkey, and all the kids, grandkids, they enjoy it too. My wife will not eat a bite of it. No matter how I try to get her to, she was spoiled, I guess, and so she doesn't eat deer meat.
So for you, and when you hunt and you are finding food and whatnot, is it important to you to save food and make sure nothing goes to waste?
Oh, yeah. My nephew and I hunt together a lot, and we have a friend up there that has a son that's handicapped, and he loves deer, but he didn't get to go hunting hardly any on account of his son. So probably for the last 15 years, one or the other of us has got him a deer, and we clean it, quarter it up, pack it in ice in a chest, and carry it to him. And he really appreciates it. But there again, we're blessed to get it, and he's blessed to get it. Mm-hmm. So we both get a blessing.
Are there any other ways that you share food, or any other occasions that you share food?
Oh, yeah, I give a lot. I give more away of the deer than I eat, really. Mm-hmm. But a lot of people like it, but they don't hunt, and that's the only way you're going to get it. You can't sell deer meat at all. It's against the law to sell any wild game like that. Deer or turkey, you can't sell them. People do, but it is against the law.
Why do you think some people don't hunt or don't grow their own food? I know you've mentioned that some people may not want to put the time in, but are there any other reasons you think some people may not do it?
Well, a lot of people think deer is, you know, so cute, so they don't want to kill that pretty little animal. But on the other side, where they're overpopulated, people can't even grow a garden because the deer eat it up before they can get to it. And but there's a lot of people that love to hunt. A lot of people don't. A lot of people think you should not. And we had one of our wonderful senators says, why would you want to go and hunt that animal and kill it and eat it when you can go down to the market and buy your meat, and no animal has to die? Figure that one out.
So what are your thoughts on more and more people saying we should stop eating meat or maybe reduce our meat consumption?
I don't think you'll ever see people stop eating meat. It's I don't think you'll ever see that, especially not in my lifetime.
Why do you think that is?
Well, people enjoy meat too much. Everybody likes steak just about it, and seafood, I like all kind of seafood. And I don't think they'll ever stop. Mm-hmm. It's getting it more expensive all along, mm-hmm. but they'll still buy it.
Do you think that has anything to do with someone's identity and the type of food that they're eating?
No, I don't. I think you do what you want to do and eat what you want to eat, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So,
to come back to, like, growing food, hunting food in the family, how important has it been for you to raise your kids and grandkids with those types of values about growing food and that it's important to save food?
Well, I think it's real important. I think most all of them love to hunt. And they have went with me when they were real small and all the way up to most of them now are the youngest one is 17 and just about all of them. A couple of them doesn't care nothing about hunting or fishing, but some of them love to fish. They don't like to hunt, and some of them like to hunt and don't like to fish. So that's and I like to do both, and they've had the opportunity to do it, whether they can form their own opinion, whether they like it or not, and whether they do it or not.
Every time it gets quiet, you smile and laugh at me. I've been learning so much speaking to you and your wife, which is also my grandmother, today about food. And so with that, with food and thinking of the future of food generally, what do you think the future holds for people and food in terms of, do you think more people will start to grow their own food again? Do you think that that's just going to decrease more and more?
Well, it may become a time where it's a necessity and not a option. Mm-hmm. And about food, I like to say that my mother was a good cook and my mother-in-law was a good cook.
We both looked up at grandmother.
So, but I think my wife, everybody thinks her mother is the best cook, but I think my wife is a better cook than either one of them because they cook different, and she learned to cook from both of them. So she can cook what both of them cooked, mm-hmm. and which is a lot more variety of food. Mm-hmm. And that's why I think she's a better cook.
I'll tell her you said so. So growing up for you, I know you've talked a lot about your dad, and you just mentioned your mother. How important was it to eat together and to cook together growing up?
Well, my father thought he had to have biscuits 3 times a day. Breakfast, dinner, and supper. And my mother spoiled him because she had it every day. And she was a good cook. And most of these older cooks can come up with something from nothing almost in a hurry. You know, it doesn't take them. A lot of people's got to plan everything and got to measure everything, and the real good cooks are dump cooks. They just dump it in there and let it go.
I'm smiling because you didn't hear the previous interview with Vernell, but she said she mentioned dump cooks as well. So how would you define a dump cook?
Well, it's a person that's cooked enough that they know how much of each thing goes in. They don't have to measure it. They can just look at it and mm-hmm. dump it in, and it turns out great. So I know I was watching a program with, they had a Cajun, and he would pour a teaspoon of salt in his hand and dump it. He didn't measure it, he just poured it in his hand. And this woman says, well, I want to know how you know that's a teaspoon of salt. And he just dumped it in his hand, took a teaspoon, and said, that's how I know. Poured it in a spoon, and it was a teaspoon of salt. Mm-hmm. And that's how dump cooks are. They've did it enough. They know about the measurements, and they just dump it in.
So why do you think, to return to your comment, that some cooks, like your mother and mother-in-law, that they can just get into the kitchen and whip something up from nothing? Why do you think that they have the ability to do that? Like, what?
Because they had to do it. Raising the families, and you didn't have, you know, a lot of people lived out. The store wasn't right there. You couldn't go get stuff right there. You had to use what you had, and they used what they had, and they learned to cook with what they had. And I think that's why they could cook a meal quick, because they had always had to do that, raising mm-hmm. a family.
Mm-hmm. So is family, I think you've mentioned this, but to just make sure I asked you, how important is family when it comes time to eating a meal together? Like, how is that connected for you? Like, eating a meal and having family there?
Oh, yeah. I think that's very important for a family to eat together. Growing up, you know, kids, we always ate together. Now, way back when I was young, when people got together more, all the kids knew. I knew all my uncles, aunts, cousins. And my kids know their immediate uncles and aunts. But we got cousins everywhere. They don't even know. Don't even know their name or know they exist. And I think that's a lot that keeps a family close together, is eating together. Mm-hmm. And take the time to eat together and talk together mm-hmm. and enjoy each other.
How does it make you feel knowing that your kids and grandkids don't necessarily have that knowledge or experiences with the extended family?
Well, I think they're missing out on a lot, but that's just the way things are now. That's the way just about all families are. They don't know a lot about their, nothing but their immediate family is all they know about. They don't know about cousins and first cousins, second mm-hmm. cousins, third cousins, you know. We always did, because we got together a lot, because there wasn't a lot to do. There was no computers, no phones, no TVs or radio, and so you had to do something to mm-hmm. kill the time. So the families got together. We always got together when I was younger with all of our cousins, aunts, uncles, and all.
So did y'all get together for anything beyond family meals? Any other activities that you would get together for?
Well, I meet the first Thursday of every month with a number of railroad people that I work with. And the reason is, you can't talk about the railroad with nobody but a railroad man or woman, because they don't know what you're talking about. So it's a good time for us. We get together the first Thursday of the month, and we have breakfast together and just talk. And it's a good time for us. We're old. All of us is older. Mm-hmm. All of us retired. So it's a good time.
So how important is it for you to maintain those types of connections?
I think it's very important. I call a lot of people. I talk to a lot of people. I love to talk. And Vernell thinks I talk too much, but other than that, it's okay. But I think it's important because a lot of people call me and ask about so-and-so, how they're doing, because they know I keep up with a lot of people.
Mm-hmm. So you like talking?
Yes.
So when it comes to talking to people and maintaining connections and just thinking of the future generally, do you think that maintaining these types of connections also, to come back to what you said at the very beginning of the interview, do you think that also plays a role in your health, maintaining your health?
I think so. Well, the more you do, the better off you're going to be. Because when a lot of people get older, they stop doing anything. And it's not long before they can't do anything. And I think you got to keep plugging along, doing what you can do, and don't stop doing something. Maybe just because you don't like to do it. Just do it anyhow. And I think it really affects your health. Because the old saying, if you don't use it, you lose it. And that's true.
Mm-hmm. So are there any stories or memories that stand out to you relating to food or watching someone you care about cook food or gathering around a dinner table, anything related to food or hunting or anything like that that you think of?
Well, my mother was a good cook, and she cooked corn. But she cooked corn in an iron skillet. And if you cook corn in an iron skillet, you have to stay and continually stir it or it sticks. You have to do it till it gets done. And now my wife cooks corn in a microwave. You don't have to do nothing to it, and it's just as good. But it does taste different out of an iron skillet, but it is a chore to cook it in an iron skillet.
So time is a huge factor when it comes to cooking.
Yeah.
And so when you say that and you're telling me that, can you picture her doing that, cooking in front of the stove? And so are there any other stories or food comments you want to make or make clear, or any words of wisdom that you want to pass along about food?
Well, I think it would be try stuff that you've never tried before, because you might like it and you might not like it, but at least you'll have an opportunity to. So many people, and I'm one of them, that don't like something, but I've never tried it. So, lamb. I've never tried lamb. I said I don't like it. Well, I've never tried it, so I don't know whether I like it or not.
So no lamb for you growing up?
No lamb. We didn't have any lamb.
So when it comes to the type of food you ate growing up, how would you define it or label it?
Well, it was, most of it was homegrown. Everything was homegrown then. Mm-hmm. I mean, now people bartered stuff, a ham for a chickens or a chicken for a ham or whatever, you know. But most people had chickens, they got eggs, they had the chickens for the meat, the hogs, and had the bacon and the smokehouses. The smoke is an awesome smell of a smokehouse. And the meat hanging. Mm-hmm. And I remember that. That's been a long time ago.
So but, would you... Oh, sorry. You go ahead.
Go ahead.
Oh, no. You finish your thought. I'm sorry. I didn't cut you off.
I was just saying, that's one of my favorite memories is the smokehouse and being there when they were when they would kill the hogs, the men would, as soon as they got the first ones, they would take the rack of ribs. They didn't smoke the ribs. They fried the ribs. They cut the ribs in little riblets about 3 or 4 inches long and carried them into the women. They cooked the back strap, cut it, and they took what they call the liver and the lights. It's the lungs. And they carried them in. Makes awesome gravy. And they would go in and make, the women would cook. And then when they got everything cooked, but most people has never ate a fried rib. Try it sometime. You will like it.
We'll have to cook some of those soon. Yeah,
they are good. And no, most people have not never ate them.
So were you ever involved in that process yourself, or did you just typically observe
it as a kid? When I was old enough, probably 10 or 12, I started hipping. And when I was 13, I started shooting all the hogs. So I was the hog killer.
The hog killer. Were there any other roles or tasks that you had growing up?
Oh, I always helped my daddy in the garden.
Okay.
That's where I learned how to plant, learn when to plant. There's a time for everything under the heavens. And, yeah.
Mm-hmm. What's your favorite thing about gardening?
Eating what you grow.
Do you have any memories that stand out with your dad in the garden?
Oh, yeah. His garden was like a picture. He lost an arm, but he still gardened with one arm. And he still planted just like he did and fished. And he says, but if you want to try something, try tying your shoe with one hand. He said, that is tough.
Do you mind me asking how he lost his arm?
He was a bobcat, was getting his chickens, and he had a shotgun, and he opened a gate, and that gun went off and shot his arm off.
Were you alive when he did that?
Yeah, I was probably 17. Yeah.
Wow.
Yep.
So did you take on more tasks when he lost his arm when you were 17? Like helping him more?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I helped a lot. But he did a lot with one arm. Most people couldn't do with two. And always had, even till he passed away, he had a beautiful garden. Always.
So would you say that some of the technology or conveniences that we've introduced more and more over the years, do you see that as a good thing, or What are your thoughts about how some of these changes have occurred for the way that we grow food and cook food and eat it?
Well, I think it's a good thing, but it's another way is people don't know how to do anything about growing. Most people don't know how to do anything about growing a garden or raising an animal and slaughtering it. And if it ever comes to that, which it could, it's going to be rough on people. If they got to do something they've never done before.
Do you think that we should, as a society, be making it easier for folks to gain that knowledge and access the knowledge and tools to be able to do that? Do you think that that is something that should be prioritized?
Well, I don't know if you could get people to go along with that or not, you know, whether they would. Because most people wouldn't, probably, because they don't think they'll ever need to have that knowledge.
Mm-hmm. I've got to go with Vivian. Okay. Well, thank you for letting me interview you today. It's always a pleasure hearing your stories, sir. So I'm going to go ahead and end the interview, and thank you.